You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Conversations from Away. My name is Aaron Michael Ray. I am the host, and this is the first new episode with the Broadway Podcast Network. So we're super excited and just wanted to give a quick shout out to them. So today I have two amazing guests, two wonderful friends of mine who I've worked with extensively, and we have Sarah Wade with us and Azalea Fairley. Hey, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
Do both of you mind just kind of giving us a little introduction?
I'm Sarah, and I'm the wardrobe supervisor for the tour of Come From Away, where I have had the lovely pleasure of working with Mr. Aaron Michael Ray. And yeah, ready to go back to work. But for now, I'm excited to be hanging out with you guys a little bit today.
Hi, everyone. My name is Azalea Fairley, and I am a costume designer. I have had the lovely pleasure of being the wardrobe supervisor on a show with Aaron. And yeah, I'm very excited to be here.
And we're so excited to have both of you here. I'm also just want to give a really quick shout out and say happy birthday to Sarah. It is her birthday today and she's spending it with us. So Sarah, thank you so much for spending your birthday with us. And also happy belated birthday to Azalea.
Thank you. Happy birthday.
Thank you guys.
So for this episode, we're going to be talking about BIPOC behind the curtain. And so we wanted to have kind of like a little mini series within our series and just talk about the departments in theater that's not just the cast and performers. So for this one, we want to talk about wardrobe and costumes. And so the first question I'll ask to both of you is, how did you get started in doing wardrobe for theater? Were you a performer first or did you go straight into it? What's your story?
If you count high school and middle school as performing, I did perform there. That's kind of where my love of theater started, but I went to college for costume design. I have a BFA. My first job was a wardrobe supervisor for a ballet company in my hometown. So,
nice. What about you, Azalea?
I started in theater as a performer in high school, and I went to school for it. DePaul University for acting performance. And I basically from there kind of just, I would start making things for shows. Like I was always sewing for people and I was always like, you don't have to put my name anywhere. You don't have to tell me, like just throw a special thanks in there for me and the program, I guess. and yeah, I was just more interested always in like the costuming aspects of everything. And then I went to France and I taught theater and English to kids there in middle school. And when I came back to New York, I moved to New York and I was like, oh, I want to work in fashion. And then I did dressing and fashion for some years. And finally, I just kind of made my way back to theater and realized like, oh, wait, this thing that you were doing for free for so long, you could actually like make a living out of it. So I started doing wardrobe and theater. I kind of graduated my way to design because that's what I wanted to do. And yeah, I've basically been doing it ever since. Yeah.
I love that. And it's so, that's so interesting because, you know, so Azalea and I did Spamilton together off Broadway in 2017, and she was my wardrobe supervisor, an amazing wardrobe supervisor at that. And I actually didn't know that part of your journey as far as moving back here and really going into fashion. But now knowing you and knowing this part of that, it totally makes sense. So I didn't know that. I love to hear it. So where does someone trained to work in costume design, wardrobe departments for theater? I guess both of you kind of answered this a little bit of, I was going to say, you know, is there a school for this? Are there BFA programs? Sarah, you said you have a BFA in, remind me again, costume design?
In costume design. Yeah, I have a BFA in costume design from Virginia Commonwealth University School of the Arts. Amazing. In Richmond, Virginia. So, yeah.
Okay. Are there, I'm just curious. I mean, are there a lot of costume or design kind of programs specifically for theater? Because I feel like there are a lot for fashion specifically, but I didn't know if that's kind of the same thing or.
Yeah, there are a lot. I think so. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I certainly think that there are a lot for design, specifically for wardrobe. I can't say whether or not there are programs out there. I feel like there are specific programs that are more technical focused. I know that wardrobe is one of those things where you can, like, if you come in with some skills, you can kind of like learn as you go some skills as far as like technical skills and also people skills. You can kind of learn and grow as you go. I know that a lot of people do internships for wardrobe. I know that you can just kind of basically go to your local theater and be like, where can I fit in here in the costume shop? Or, you know, what do you need me to do? Can you teach me how to do this? Can you teach me how to seam or, you know, sew button on or something like that? Yeah. So you can kind of like learn as you go, or you can go through one of the programs that are more technical focused.
Okay. I truly did not even know that. I think I just kind of assumed that, you know, if you want to go into being a costume designer or something like that, you kind of have to go through a fashion kind of route. But it's good to know that there are, you know, programs and there are, but it's also just as, you know, attainable to be a part of it if you really want to. And I love that. I feel like I know a lot of people who, whether they're in wardrobe, stage management, or whatever department that's not performing, I feel like a lot of them started as performers and then just kind of realized, oh, well, maybe this is more my lane, or maybe this is more what I actually want to do. So I'm always curious to hear about how people got into those departments.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like most people in theater that I know started off as performers, because that's like your entree into everything. And as far as like design goes, like you can obviously go anywhere and learn how to design and, like, you know, do your training and all that stuff. But I think it also might be worth clarifying that costume design and wardrobe are in the same family, certainly, but two very distinctly different things. Wardrobe is like more technical. It's more running the show. It's more kind of figuring out very weird theater problems that you would only run into in theaters. For clothes, it's working with actors in the run of the show, whereas costume design is more so, you know, figuring out like the design of the actual costumes,
right?
And collaborating with the director and all that stuff. Just to clarify.
Oh, yeah, thank you for that. I mean, that's good to know. I feel like I kind of just, they're both in similar worlds, so I think I always just kind of combine them, but thank you for clarifying that difference. I'm glad that you mentioned that. But in Come From Away, our costume department, something I really wanted to talk about really just with this episode is BIPOC representation in the costuming world and wardrobe world as well. And I remember when I started rehearsals for the tour of Come From Away, I was so excited. And, you know, we were in rehearsals here in New York. And something I noticed was that it's predominantly white, which, you know, it is what it is. But at the same time, I was so just excited to be there. And I still am excited to go back. And, you know, then as we were rehearsing and then we started having fittings, you know, they would call us in to go to get fitted. And that was when I met our amazing costume designer, Tony Leslie James. And I went into that fitting room and it was like Tony and then DeVario and everybody was Black. And it was like all of her associates who were in the room were Black and they were all fitting me for all the costumes I wear for this show. And I just remember walking in like, oh my gosh, like, hey y'all, you know, like we're all here. Like I see us. Okay. Okay. And that was truly, I think, the first time that I had like an all Black costume department for a show that I was working on. And that was really special to me. And I just, I think when I think about all the other shows that I've had, that I've done, and there just was little to no BIPOC representation, it just, it made me, like, that was the first time I realized, like, wait, this is completely possible. You know, like, there, this absolutely should be part of the question. This should be part of, you know, every department, really. But something I want to ask y'all is, what do you think we can do to have more BIPOC representation in the costuming and wardrobe world? And how can we increase BIPOC employment in this field?
I think we should start with, like, kids and helping them to realize this is a career you can pursue. And I think that if younger people knew all of the different facets of theater and everything that goes into it, I think that they would be more interested to knowing how everything works. It's such a team experience. I'd also love for the union to be more involved, especially with that education aspect for kids and younger people, just kind of showing, like, this is possible. You can do this, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. Start early with saying that acting is not the only thing that you can do in theater and, you know, live your life and make a career. And if you're more interested in this, there's a place for you. I also think that, you know, institution-wise, maybe hire more so from within. Like, I feel like there's been a lot of experiences where I've seen people kind of get hired from outside because they're the homie of whoever, such and such, where you also have, you know, this pool of qualified BIPOC people who could take on, you know, the role or whatever, who have been in, like, maybe an entry-level position for however many years or whatever. I think that maybe theaters could offer paid internships. I feel like that's a huge barrier for BIPOC folks to enter into this industry. And just, I think that it's up to theaters to really commit to making their backstages look as diverse as they want on stage to look.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, I really love those responses because, you know, something that I think we're all just so ready for in this moment of, you know, us still being in COVID and theater being on pause for us, you know, I think the second we get the green light to go do shows again and start working again, you know, we're so ready to see all these changes that we've been talking about. But what so many people don't realize is that, you know, we also, if we want to see significant changes, it's going to take some time. And two, also, kind of like both of y'all said, you know, let's start with the future. Like, so that means the kids, the high school theater kids who, you know, maybe they really just want to be involved in theater in some way, but they just don't know exactly where they fall or where their lane is, or, you know, and maybe going into costume design for theater is what they want to do, going into wardrobe designing, or, you know, that's something that they would want to do. And so I think it's really important for us to think about the future of where we want it to go. And it also has to start with the young ones. And so I think if we can get them more interested in just wanting to be involved in theater in any way, then it will open a lot more doors. And I always say, you know, I can't wait for this younger generation to just really come up in this industry as well, because we really see the future in them. And that is, it only gives me optimism looking forward.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. And also, I feel like there's a sense of, like, you know, what we're doing right now in theater is trying to work backwards so heavy. And we're trying to do all of this while we're not actually working. I feel like instead of trying to work backwards, why not just, like, start fresh with the youth and keep it moving, you know, and also work backwards at the same time. We could do both.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to ask both of you this question. Have you ever been pigeonholed in this industry?
I think there may have been times, but not really. Maybe for being female. I think it was hard to break into the industry at a young age. and maybe I could say that, but it took me a while before I was able to go out for bigger productions, I think, because I started out pretty young. But other than that, no, not for me.
What about you, Azalea?
I definitely have been pigeonholed so often. whenever I do wardrobe, I feel like I recently have been pigeonholed. But for me, that's been kind of a place of like, this sounds very weird to say, but it's been kind of a place of slight comfort because, you know, you're working on shows by contemporary Black, BIPOC playwrights. And this is cool stuff that you're working on. You're working with, you know, BIPOC actors, and you don't feel so much of a need to code switch. I know that when we worked on Samilton together, that was like truly kind of a moment that just existed in and of itself. And we would kind of talk about it sometimes, how there will never be an environment that we could be this free to be our full selves ever again, you know, backstage. So I've definitely been pigeonholed into doing, you know, particular shows, and it hasn't necessarily been a bad thing to me.
That's interesting because, you know, I feel as actors, when I think of me being pigeonholed, you know, I think of people only being able to see me in, you know, predominantly Black shows or, you know, something like that, like the Color Purples and the whatever. And so, you know, like, I think as an actor, I don't like to be pigeonholed. And I wanted to ask both of you this because, you know, it's just different all around. And I knew that both of you would have different answers, which is why I wanted to kind of compare them and just really that both of those responses really opened my eyes. And especially Azalea, when you were talking about how, you know, when we were in Spamilton, it was everybody involved pretty much was BIPOC, someone of color. And you're so right. I mean, that was one of the only experiences, I think, where there was no code switching. There was no, it was just us completely being ourselves and us completely just knowing that we had a safe place. And unfortunately, you know, that's not always promised in some of these shows. And I have to give a shout out to Sarah because I feel like from the jump, Sarah has always made me feel comfortable before going on stage. I've always loved working with Sarah, and not just saying that because it's your birthday, but but, you know, I mean, I'm really thankful that both of you have provided those safe spaces, even when maybe outside of those departments it wasn't. So just wanted to let y'all know that.
Aww. Yeah. Well, you're very welcome. I also just want to say, like, you know, when people pigeonhole people based on, like, you know, oh, I can't understand this show, or I don't want to watch this show because it's a Black show and I have nothing to do with that, or like, I can't understand this show because it's from, like, you know, a queer point of view or whatever, or all of these things, I think that Come From Away, I actually have not seen Come From Away, but I know that it definitely does kind of touch on how when we kind of get pigeonholed, we kind of take away or rob ourselves and each other of each other's experiences. And, like, you know, some things truly are universal. I think that, like, I'm sorry, you go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I keep wanting to just chime in because I just love everything you're saying. But you're so right. I mean, especially in Come From Away, like, it is a perfect definition of not judging a book by its cover, in every sense of the word, with all the characters, with the stories, and how all the stories intertwine. And you realize, you know, the reason why these characters in the show start having so much love and compassion for each other is because they remove their prejudices, and they have to remove, you know, all those layers, and they don't, it's when they stop pigeonholing each other into a certain place, and then they just get over that and say, well, who are you as a person? you know, and that's a huge part of the Come From Away story. So you're completely right about that.
All right, honorary Newfoundlanders, we'll be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Something I really wanted to bring up was there is a dance documentary that I really, really love called First Position. And it's basically this documentary about these up-and-coming young ballet dancers from, I think the youngest was like, in the movie, I think the youngest was maybe 10 or something like that. And the oldest, I think, was probably like 16 or 17. And the oldest person that was on the documentary, her name is Michaela DePrince. And she's an American ballet dancer. She was born in Sierra Leone and then came to America when she was a baby, her and her sister. And there was this part in the documentary where Michaela is a beautiful, dark-skinned ballet dancer, and her parents are white. They adopted her and her sister. And I remember this one scene, and I will never forget this, where the mom, her mom was dyeing all of her tights the right color that actually matches Michaela's skin. And Michaela has vitiligo, so... You know, so she also has to think about that in addition to, you know, the color nude and how, like, you know, nude tights really just means white. And Michaela has beautiful dark skin. And so, you know, her mom was up at like 2 a.m. or something, just dyeing all of her tights and things like that to make sure they actually match her skin color. And my sister is also a dancer. And I don't even think my parents ever did that because I don't think they really knew how to, but also that was just one of those things where it was kind of like, oh, I guess they just don't have their skin color, so we just kind of have to use the darkest one or whatever. And so I'm just curious to know, and especially Sarah, since you've worked with the Richmond Ballet, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so have you had that kind of similar experience of, you know, having to adjust, like making certain things the right skin color with ballet shoes and things like that?
Yeah, so working at the Richmond Ballet was like my first big girl job out of college. And I learned so much there. And we had this really great dye room. And I have such fond memories of airbrushing pointe shoes to match skin colors. And I'm sitting in there mixing up all the right colors and doing a little test swatch and running up 2 flights of stairs to where the ballet studio is, creeping in on rehearsal just to try to like grab an arm or a leg to say like, is this close enough? No, not quite. And like running back down and doing that. And we had a big dye vat where we would dye leotards if they needed to be skin color too. So that holds a really special place in my heart. And I think it was a good place to start to learn the ins and the outs of how much that goes into that. So,
because I feel like I haven't, at least in the shows that I've done so far, I haven't had to, thankfully, I haven't really had to worry so much about things, you know, costume pieces or anything being close to my skin color. Really something that we kind of joked about this, but something that I do have to worry about as me being 6'3 and size 15, I will go to my first fittings and I'll just say, I am so sorry because just me existing will just be really hard for your job. So, you know, like break a leg on looking for shoes for me, you know, all that's always been my biggest issue. But thankfully, both of y'all in the shows that we've done together have accommodated for my large size. So
I hope that no costumer has ever made you feel a way about anything like that. Like, that's our job to, you know, find the costume, do the costume, make it work for you. Like, it's not, you know, whatever. Okay. I remember when you said that to me first and I was like, all right, size 15 and okay. You know, nobody should ever make you feel bad about like what your body is or like does or, you know.
Mm-mm. Especially with the pandemic too. I feel like after we come back, especially with Come From Away, like we are lucky. We have a little bit of forgiveness and we are what we are, and we will start from where we are when we get back together and make it all work. And I've been talking to the Broadway supervisor about that, about like where, you know, where we're landing and how we're going to adjust, and we're ready. So,
yeah, we got a lot of work to do, a lot of work ahead of us. I feel like this whole thing, when it comes back, will like just take several, it'll take a long time.
Yeah, we can do it. I'm ready.
I feel that too, but and you know what? That's why I'm so glad that both of y'all are even on this episode today, because both of you, I have full faith in knowing that, you know, when the industry starts up again, that y'all are going to be on the right side of it and really making sure that it's more inclusive. And so everyone feels like they belong in, you know, just even when we know as actors that the wardrobe and costume departments are making it work for us and we feel comfortable on stage and in our costume, that adds so much to our performance in so many ways that I don't think y'all get enough credit for. So I feel like on behalf of actors everywhere, you know, I just want to say thank you, because, you know, both of y'all have gone to so many lengths to make sure that we feel comfortable on stage and my shoes fit and, you know, I don't have a loose button or something. And if something happens, and we'll figure it out and everything's going to be fine. So thank you for that.
Of course. That's my pleasure.
Absolutely.
So what is one thing, I have a feeling I'm going to ask a lot of people this question on every episode, but what is one thing you wish to change in our industry when we resume after COVID?
I think as like a touring crew member, I would love to see more reach from my union to hire more BIPOC crew locals. And I just love to have the opportunity to work with some new and talented people in different cities that we go to. I think that that would be such a great place and such a good change to see walking back into touring life.
That's actually a really good answer. I didn't think about like not seeing a lot of BIPOC crew when you're in different cities, you know. I think that for myself, I would really love it if theaters would stop pigeonholing people and, you know, just allow people to, if somebody is great at what they do, allow them to be great at what they do despite their experience in this world or despite how they walk through the world, because a job is a job. Also, I've really been enjoying having a life outside of theater. One thing that I used to notice, like whenever I watched the Tonys, is that every person who accepted something would always be like, I'm so sorry to my family and to my children and, you know, everybody who I have, you know, had to neglect this past year, basically. And it's been nice to slowly get back into working. Also realize that I've been developing the relationships that I have in my life, you know, keeping up with my friendships, been able to, you know, talk more to my family. And I think that we've all taken that away from this year, but particularly in our industry, you know, 8 shows a week is actually a lot. I don't know if that's sustainable after this. Like even just getting back to that is gonna be hard. Like, I think we spoke about doing one show, starting with one show, and then seeing how we feel.
You're so right about that. I mean, we have so much conditioning to do to get back to 8 shows a week, because when I don't think people who, especially the people who are not in this industry at all, like, we do more shows a week than there are days in the week. So, and we have one day off. So, you know, maybe. You know, that's like not a holiday schedule, you know? So like, going back, I totally agree with that. I just think that, I feel like that could be a whole other episode too. Just like, you know, I think before 2020, and I was very guilty of this too, of like, you have to work so hard and no breaks, no vacation, whatever, not until you get to where you want to go. But also, like, I saw something on Twitter today that said something like, I don't know who needs to hear this, but if you have PTO or you have vacation days, use them. You know, like, I, and that's just one of those things. It's like, if we have those opportunities to take a break, then take a break. And COVID forced us to do that. And I think a lot of people realize, oh my God, like, my life has only been work, or my life has, you know, like, I feel like I don't regret anything that I did in the past when it comes to, you know, working too much. But at the same time, I do regret not taking more time off when I knew that I needed it, or I knew that my body needed it. So
absolutely.
Even when it comes to just like calling out, you know, like stuff like that too. It's like, if you don't feel well, then you don't have to do the show. And I know I'm saying that as a standby, but, but, you know, it's like, it's just, it's so real. Like, we don't have to, you know, not see our families for months and months or years or whatever. We don't have to push ourselves this hard all the time, you know, but like, I'm really glad that you said that.
Yeah. The burnout is so real. To get burnt out one time a year is a lot, but we would just all get burnt out several times a year. I know that for me, I just every few months I would have a burnout and just be like, I can't exist in the world for like 24 full hours. And then I'll go back to like doing the 2 gigs because I freelance. So, you know, it was a lot for my mental health and my body. Mm-hmm. And I just hope that, like, you know, when we go back, maybe there will be some type of change with the scheduling of, like, you know, as far as just how long do we spend in tech or something like that. I know that, you know, actors get breaks every now and then and whatnot, and it is a long day, but for the designers and for the wardrobe people and for all the crew backstage, it's a much longer day than just like 12 hours or so. You know, I just hope that we can all like find a little bit more balance in our life, because this is, it's been nice to just exist and like understand that I'm a person who has a body, who needs things.
And the pandemic, it's almost like reminded me who I am without theater too. And like having time to explore other hobbies and like really harness those. And I hope that, like, because there's a part of me that's like, I hope I can still do this when I'm back on tour. Yeah. And I need to make that more of a priority to like have that balance however I can get it, you know?
Yeah, and especially, Sarah, since we've been on the road, you know, I know you've been touring since before we even started going on the road. And so, and there are a bunch of people in our company, whether on stage or not, who have went from one tour to our tour. And like,
it's been 7 years for me. So this is like the first break that I've had from touring. So like, it's been...
Wow.
It's like my whole world turned the other direction in a good way. It's been such a good break.
Yeah.
But it's bittersweet, like everything, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Bittersweet, for sure.
Oh. So the last question I'll ask y'all is this, and it doesn't have to be someone in your department or someone that's even in this industry, but who inspires you the most to keep doing what you do?
I'd have to say all of my coworkers who all come together, we're all pulling off the same amazing feat that is live theater. Especially my come from away family. I haven't ever experienced a group of people that give you the warm fuzzies every single day. And like, it's just such a special group of people. And I've never had that before, which is really nice. But I also have to say the audience, like there's nothing like hearing the hush of the crowd at the beginning of the show. And then the feedback at the end, and you're just like, we pulled it off. We did it. Like, there's nothing like that. That's such a good feeling. And I can't wait to feel that again.
That's so beautiful. I love that the show is as heartwarming backstage as it is on stage. As it
really
is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is.
For myself, who inspires me to keep doing what I do? I am constantly inspired by the, essentially, like, the people who are making theater right now, as far as, like, that work goes. You know, I'm inspired by designers that I've worked with. I'm inspired by different writers. I love Adria Marie Brown. I love Audre Lorde so much. And I think that, like, it's important for me to continue doing this if I love it so much, because I do feel like theater is a space to, like, I don't know if I should say this, but I feel like theater kind of inherently is a political space, and like we can figure out a lot about each other and about where our world is right now through theater and through the stuff that's being written and designed and performed and whatnot right now. Yeah, so I don't want to name names, but I will name names because I feel like these artists are like kind of more intersectional. I think that they show you that you can be an activist and an artist. Like, let's see, like Montana Levi Blanco, Toni Leslie James, of course. She's incredible.
Yes, of course.
Jeremy O. Harris, Jordan Cooper. Let's see, who else? Erica Dickerson. I don't know if I said Queen Jean or Cookie Jordan or Jackie Sybil's Drury or Celine Song or like there's so many amazing contemporary artists right now who are able to experience their work while they're here. So
I really love that. And so I want to say thank y'all so much for joining this episode. Before we wrap up, I really want to make sure that I said something about this recently. As of this week, there was yet again another killing of an unarmed Black man by the police, and his name is Dante Wright. And I won't go too far into it, but all I want to say is that, yes, this is still happening. Yes, you know, our people who look like me are dying. People who look like Azalea are dying because of what we look like. And even though this was a quote unquote accident, whatever that even means, you know, it's still, that still just means that another innocent Black man is yet again a hashtag. And I don't want to be a hashtag. And I don't want your loved ones who are Black, who are BIPOC, to be a hashtag. So all I'm going to say is that I hope that people understand that we're not any further along than we were last summer when it comes to this. And I just really need everyone to listen, you know, obviously listen and learn, but do something, take action. I think something that is just a very easy, actionable step is just having these conversations and talking about it. Maybe there's someone in your life that, you know, doesn't really think this happens, or, you know, maybe if he complied, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this isn't one of those situations. This is another murder of a Black person who didn't do anything wrong at the time they were pulled over. And so, because I don't want this to happen to me, and because I don't want this to happen to any of our Black folks, I just want to make sure that everyone understands that this is very much still happening. And that's all I'm going to say on that, because, you know, I wanted to make sure this podcast is about BIPOC behind the curtain. But if this continues to happen, then we're still going to have to continue talking about it until it gets fixed. So I'm off my soapbox, and I just want to say thank you so much to Sarah Wade and Azalea Fairley for joining us on this episode. I'm so glad that all three of us could be in a virtual room together, because I love you both so much, and I respect you both and love working with you both. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. This was really fun.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to this episode of Conversations from Away. We will see you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.